listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back. We're joined by my friend and colleague at the Center for Security Policy, our Senior Vice President for Policy and Programs, Fred Flights, a career intelligence professional and man who has spent a lifetime at the CIA, at the State Department, on Capitol Hill in the House Intelligence Committee, monitoring, among other threats to our country, that posed by a nuclear-armed Iran. The day of which he has warned for many years seems now very much at hand, in part thanks to the negotiations that the Obama administration has been engaging in. Fred Flights, I'm delighted to have you back with us to get an update. How are you doing?
Good to be here, Frank. I'm fine.
Good. The Associated Press earlier today published the latest in some leaks from the administration, presumably, about the contents of this deal. What do we know, on the basis at least of that report, that we didn't before, or what do you think it's confirmed about what's shaping up, in the words of Bibi Netanyahu, to be a very bad deal?
Well, the AP is confirming repeated leaks that this deal will allow Iran to continue to operate 6,000 centrifuges. The previous number was 6,500. You know, even 1,500 centrifuges would be more than enough for Iran to quickly make weapons-grade uranium from its reactor-grade uranium stockpile. So this is a terrible concession, and it just shows that we have really had our lunch eaten by the Iranians. But more troubling is what the AP is saying about sanctions. According to the Associated Press, sanctions will be lifted immediately when this new deal comes about. Now, the administration had previously said sanctions would be lifted gradually if Iran has complied with the deal. This would be an extraordinary concession, if true. I'm very worried about it.
Yeah. And again, if true is the operative word here, but it sounds right, doesn't it, that we're watching kind of the administration abandoning all of the past principles and positions that not only it has taken, but in some cases have historically been taken by the United States government. But if sanctions, and by that I assume they mean not just American unilateral sanctions, but also those imposed by the United Nations, were to be removed, Fred Flights, and again, you spent time with John Bolton at the State Department helping to cobble together some of those sanctions, what are the chances that should the Iranians fail to live up to their part of this bargain, bad as it is, that the sanctions would be able to be reconstituted?
Well, let me first say that these extraordinary concessions reflect the fact that this deal's in trouble, and the Obama administration is in trouble, and the Iranians know it. And I think that's why we've had these extraordinary concessions offered. Concerning sanctions, the toughest sanctions were unilaterally passed by Europe and the United States. The UN sanctions were actually pretty weak. And I think that we're talking about Europe and the United States lifting their sanctions. The UN sanctions are weak because China and Russia have used their vetoes to water them down. But there's pretty tough sanctions on financial activities with Iran, oil sales from Iran to Europe. And if they're lifted, it would be quite a boon to the Iranian economy.
And something that is not going to be easily reimposed, presumably, even if it's just out of the European Union. And Fred Flights, one of the things that you've been writing about at our Secure Freedom .org website is the, among other places, is the treachery charge that has been leveled against members of the United States Senate, 47 of them to be precise, who have raised concerns about this deal, specifically raised concerns about the prospect that the administration has advanced that it won't bother to bring any agreement that it forges with the Iranians to the Congress for their consideration, let alone to the Senate for its advice and consent, as the Constitution requires. What do you think is the current state of play with respect to both the soundness of the letter writer's position on the one hand and the advisability of what the administration is doing in this regard as well?
It's just incredible that the Obama administration are calling members of the Senate traitors, treasonous, for basically exercising their free speech rights under the Constitution. They sent a letter to the Iranian government stating a fact that this is an executive agreement between one president and Iran, and the next president can throw it out because the president will not allow the Senate to vote on this. According to John Yoo, a former Justice Department official under the Bush administration, there's three types of agreements: a treaty, a congressional executive agreement, and a sole executive agreement. Something this important should be a treaty or a congressional executive agreement. That way, it has legitimacy because it has congressional buy-off. That shows that the president is acting on behalf of the American people. not just on his own. This is such a terrible deal. These senators took the extraordinary step of writing a letter to inform Europe, Iran, and the rest of the world that the president is not speaking for the American people on this terrible sellout to the Iranian mullahs.
And you regard that, as I understand it, as leadership rather than treachery, and I concur completely. Fred, let me turn to another subject that you've been following, I know, closely. You have, as I indicated, a background in intelligence matters, an appreciation of security practice, not least having served as the chief of staff to Ambassador Bolton when he was an undersecretary of state. You have an intimate firsthand knowledge of the policy and procedure for protecting classified information in the department. Based on what you know as of now, and we'll be speaking more momentarily with Irene Garcia of Judicial Watch, which has done extraordinarily important work in terms of bringing to light information about this secret email system that Hillary Clinton established. Was that consistent with State Department policy, A? And B, to the extent it was not, do you have concerns as to the degree to which classified information or other sensitive details of American policy deliberations and the like may have been compromised by virtue of the disregard for policy and perhaps even the law by Hillary Clinton?
I'm very concerned about this, Frank. This was not consistent with State Department policy. I would first say secretaries of state shouldn't be conducting any official business on a internet email account or personal cell phone because of the risk of hostile powers intercepting it. She had a secure email account she should have been using, and I think the Benghazi Commission needs to look at that. When she used personal cell phone, personal email, she did not have the benefit of State Department security monitoring to make sure that these conversations, and they may seem innocuous, but even her meetings, her daily routine, maybe dissidents she met with, this is important intelligence that may have put lives at risk and endangered U.S. national security. But there's another angle that John Bolton raised today in a Washington Times piece, and it's on securefreedom.org. Hostile powers may have hacked Hillary Clinton's cell phone to covertly turn them into listening devices, to eavesdrop on meetings and her personal conversations. We know hostile intelligence agencies can do this. Bolton thinks this is a big deal that has to be looked into.
Does he have reason to believe, Fred Flights, that that actually happened, or is it speculation that it could have happened?
Well, his concern is that because she was using a personal cell phone that was not being monitored by State Department security, when she traveled to hostile countries, this could have happened. And I know from my time in government, there are certain countries you can't bring a government cell phone to. The electronic threat is so severe. And when you come back from one of these countries, if you have to bring a cell phone, the State Department always monitors them to see if anything was implanted on that phone while you were abroad. And it looks to me like she didn't go through any of this, and there could be some serious security implications.
It goes without saying, Fred Flights, that this is a woman who aspires, we're told, to being the next commander-in-chief. The conduct, both with respect to her emails and now quite possibly her other communications devices, suggests indifference to basic security practices and procedures, to say nothing of what she's supposed to do. What she herself at one point, as I recall, promulgated was State Department policy. And this just bespeaks a lack of discipline, I think, at best, and perhaps an utter disregard for the national security that should be considered, it seems to me at least, utterly disqualifying for a candidacy by Hillary Clinton. Fred, we have to leave it at that. I'm afraid we've got so much more to talk about. We'll look forward to doing so with you again next week. In the meantime, thank you for the terrific work you're doing at the Center for Security Policy. It's deeply appreciated. Secure Freedom is our brand. Secure Freedom is what we do, and you make a very sizable contribution to it. Next up, Irene Garcia of Judicial Watch joins us to talk about protected government informants who happen to be on the FBI's most wanted list. That and Hillary Clinton's emails and more straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.